Why is it a big issue?
So this is why. This is why this kind of fraud is increasing. Most of the times, there is no lawsuit for this fraud. Most of the company does not feel any complaints. So there is almost no risk for the fraudster.
Meet Laurent Seurat, the proud founder and CEO of SysID, a dynamic company dedicated to revolutionizing the way to combat fraud. Passionate about technology and driven by a commitment to create secure digital environments, his approach combines technological innovation with a deep understanding of the human element behind fraud attempts.
The main characteristic of the financial crime is that it's non-violent. You've got different ways to do that, but as an example...
This is absolutely insane. People can impersonate Google itself.
But they are moving way more faster than we are.
Oh my God.
It's very easy to organize massive scan at very low cost.
How do you actually detect those?
There is always a solution. You need to understand the way they fraud, the way they do get organized, and you need to put in place the right barrier. This is something that you may want to use when it's available.
I think this is fascinating. I've looked at the back end of our channels, and it says that since Corporate Treasury 101 started, 77.6% of you who watch or listen haven't yet hit subscribe or follow, depending on the platform you're listening or watching this on. So I have a favor to ask you. If you've enjoyed this channel, if you've enjoyed the content, if you're enjoying this episode right now, please can I ask a small favor? Please hit the subscribe or follow button. Helps this show more than I can explain. And I promise, if you do that, to return the favor, we will make this show better and better and better. That's the promise I'm willing to make if you hit that button. Do we have a deal?
Laurent, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Let's start broad. Could you please give us a brief overview of what financial crime is, please?
First of all, let's go back a little bit in time. In the 90s, bank robberies were very famous and common, okay?
Absolutely.
So let's say that today, Bonnie and Clyde has been replaced by Bernard Madoff, known as Bernie, right? To simplify, financial crime today is what bank robbery was in the 90s. And basically, this is stealing money from organizations, public or private. Okay? It can be tax scam, carbon tax scam, which has been very famous in France for the total amount of the scam, as an example.
How much was it, the total amount of the scam?
I think it has been more than 20 billion euros.
That is insane.
That the government paid. Meaning our taxes.
So we paid.
Yes. Basically, but French people paid for that. Okay. And most of the times, what's the main characteristic of the financial crime is that it's non-violent. Directly, physically non-violent. This is what financial crime is. No risk from a physical perspective, at least directly, right? When you've got criminal organizations, you can have side effects, damages for people, but most of the time it's seen as non-violent crime.
So is it, because that puts a dimension, we can think it's less bad as a physical crime. Well, physical crime is, and health is the worst, but definitely because of the amounts and how it can shake a whole economy, basically, it's still ultra-violent, but not physically.
Yes, exactly. And it's in the mind of people, you know, it's not that a big deal to steal money from a company. You have the feeling that you do not hurt individuals. It's just like, it's not a big deal.
But so that's very interesting. So let's dig into that. Because I could understand why people might think that. It's like, well, okay, it's corporate money. Why is it a big issue? Like, can you a bit educate us on that? Why is it an issue nonetheless?
Well, because if you take the example of the scam of carbon tax in France, it has been a huge amount of money, meaning that for the organizations, companies, or public entities, you lose money. If you lose money, you've got to find it another way, meaning that if I rob the government will put in place taxes to get the money back anyway.
Right.
And also, what you have to keep in mind is that when I first started to work with SysID, I was thinking like, hey, a fraudster is a cool guy, right? When they perform a fraud, they go to Mexico and drink pina colada on the beach, which I was completely wrong. We all have to understand that the financial crime most of the times bring finance for drug traffics, terrorism, all kind of traffics, which is for us as individual all across the world the big issue to me. So we have to understand that it is not for for some individuals to have fun. It's feel the finance criminal organizations, which is to me a big deal.
I get that. We tend to romanticize a bit this type of, okay, big escape, big shortage, like you rob a bank and then you have money and you can just go to the Bahamas. And back to the aspect that you talked about earlier, which is it's not physically violent crime, but if it's used to finance terrorist organization or whatsoever, or mafia or mobs, whatever it is, then it comes down to this, because you give those people the means to do the acts that are usually not very citizen friendly, to say the least.
Absolutely. But it looks like directly non-violent.
Right.
Indirectly, yes, it is at the end. But it looks like not a big deal.
So I like the analogy that you took at the beginning. Like in the 1990s, we had the bank robberies. Now, obviously, I mean, there is still this type of ATM robberies, but it's much less impactful, quote unquote, because the amount of money that we are looking at is not what it used to be. However, this has shifted towards the digital and cyber world, where the amounts involved could be tremendously higher, but it's also not targeted only at banks anymore. It's like corporations, because of that digital footprint they have and how much they rely on this whole digital world. Can you walk us through maybe through what payment fraud is then, if we do a zoom in a bit on part of this financial crime?
Sure. To keep it very simple, it's when you manage to hijack a payment from its initial receiver. Okay, this is what it is. So you make somebody or a corporate send money to somebody who should not receive this money. It can be done in many, many different ways. Most of the time, the fraudster managed to change the bank account information of the initial receiver to get the money on his behalf. This is basically what it is when we speak about fraud of authorized push payment fraud. This is what it is, in simple words.
Very clear. So it would mostly be about, okay, this payment is meant to happen, I'm just going to change the beneficiary, and not that much about, okay, I'm going to initiate a new payment from scratch to a new beneficiary and make it look like it's a natural counterparty or something like that?
Yes, it is. In a very simple way, yes. High level, this is what it is.
Okay. Very clear. So, and I think you mentioned it very briefly, but what's an APP? So the acronym stands for Authorized Push Payments. Yeah. So what is that?
You've got many different ways to pay somebody or pay a corporate. You can do that with cash. You can do that with check. And also you can do that with authorized push payments. I mean, you got to tell your bank to pay somebody else on his bank account. Okay, so no cash, no check, no paper. It's all digital.
So maybe to take a step back, Laurent, what is a push payment to begin with? Just to make sure we understand all the concepts properly.
A push payment is when I, as SysID, decide to send money to your company. So I'm going to tell my bank, push that amount of money on Guillaume's company account, which is this one. And this account is held by this specific bank in America, Spain, Portugal, China, Australia, New Zealand, Angola, wherever. So I push money from my bank account to your bank account directly.
Makes a lot of sense. And then authorized, I guess, is because you authorized it. As the person who has authority on this bank account to execute payments, you authorize this push payment. So when there is an APP, an authorized push payment fraud, it's because the fraudster made him or her look like it was you, the authorized person to make payments for SysID, and push the payment towards not the right counterparty. Is that it?
Well, or he can convince me that I should push my payments to a bank account information, which I think is yours, but it's not.
Right. How do they do that?
You've got different ways of doing that.
Yeah, but so how? Like, walk us through, not that I want to get into the financial crime world, but just to understand, how does one just comes as probably me or trying to impersonate me and say, Laurent, this is the bank account that I should receive the money on? Like, how does that actually happen?
Well, you've got way different ways to do that. But as an example, I'm going to hijack your mailbox. Okay. So I will send emails to Laurent Sarah, pretending that I am Guillaume with your email account. And I say, hey, Laurent, I just changed my bank account number because I changed my bank. I'm not with Bank of America. I'm now in my bank is now Barclays. Right. So this is my new bank account information. Please invoice that you should pay to me. Pay on this new bank account. As simple as it is.
Interesting. And you say, it's the second time you say information. What does that have to do? The bank account information?
It's a bank account number and a routing code. It should tell to which bank your payment goes and on which number, which is basically your identification within your bank.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense. So why are these type of payments and these types of frauds increasingly becoming a concern for treasurers and companies in general? Because obviously treasurers are one of the safekeeper of payments and systems when it comes to cash management. But why is it becoming more and more of a concern for companies?
Well, if I get back again to the 90s, most of people were using cash or check, okay? You understand that nowadays, I mean, companies are working with other companies all across the world. So bringing cash from New Zealand to France, it's a long way, okay? Check, which was very popular and still is very popular in the US. Again, it's paper. You've got to sign, you've got to recognize, you've got to read the amounts, you've got to read who it should be credits to. So it's a lot of paperwork and not very digitalized. What happened is that, and especially after the COVID, you know, is because when you do receive a check, you have to open the envelope and bring it to the bank and so on. When push payments are very much more easy to manage, easy to emit, easy to receive, less paperwork for the banks. Okay, so now more and more payments are going through authorized push payments. It's in France, as an example, it's most of the payment goes that way. I mean, check in B2B environment, check that not very used anymore. Okay, so why it becomes a concern for the treasurer is that when you get a fraud for authorized push payments, most of the times there is no lawsuit for this kind of fraud. Most of the company does not feel any complaint. So there is almost no risk for the fraudster.
Can we just focus on that? Why is that? Is it because they don't even know it happened?
No. They know it happened. Okay. But you've got to go to the police. And since a number of this kind of fraud are increasing incredibly, the law force do not have all the resources to do the job and to find the criminals. So it depends on the amount of the fraud. If it's million or billion, yeah, they're gonna work at it. If it's like 200K, most of the times you're gonna feel your complaints, but there will be nothing behind, because they don't have all the resources to actually find who manage the fraud. So the company knows that. So when it's a big fraud, yes, they feel complaints and they try to find who it was and they try to get the money back. But when it's amount like 200K, 300K, 400K, nothing happened. So the companies know that. So most of the times they say, damn it, I need to reinforce my processes. I need to take care. But like in 75% of the cases, they do not feel any complaint. So you understand that when we know that, when I do know that, fraudster also know that. So there is few risk from the fraudster. side, if you compare to the 90s, when you had a bank robbery, you could get a bullet in your head. So this is why this kind of fraud is increasing. Okay. Secondly, it's very easy to organize massive scan at very low cost. Okay. It's kind of easy. It's very profitable and not very expensive to organize. So you want to do that. Well, if you don't care to go in jail one day, you want to do that. As far of today, most of the organizations are fighting against this kind of fraud manually, which is a real concern when it becomes numerous. When you get a lot of fraud attempts, it becomes a real concern for the treasurer because he knows that the risk is increasing. So he needs to get organized. And the only way to get organized is actually to get more people to do so, which is not very very profitable, yes, for that.
Yeah, because so the fraud in itself is a net loss, as you said at the beginning. It's just lost money. It's not like you produce something and it can be sold at a discount and you're making a small loss. Here it's like pure loss on your bottom line.
Yes, but basically, if you want to do the math, you pay twice the price of what you've ordered. Okay, whether it's a service or a project by yourself, you pay once, money get lost. So if you want your product or if you want your service, you get to pay another time. So it's twice the price of what you should have paid.
And yeah, as you mentioned, I get so lack of resources on the people who actually fight financial crime. And I imagine it also takes another set of skills, right? And absolutely no offense and total respect for our national police in France. But being able to track and chase a bank robber is requiring a complete different set of skills than actually finding the digital footprint of a financial fraudster who just probably went through, I don't even know the jargon and the lingo of this industry, but like probably had a proxy and hid his identity and did his whole thing to protect himself. Of course, it's like completely different by nature and it's evolving.
So it's not, from my side, it's not a lack of respect for the authorities in any country in the world. That's very difficult to get focus on a specific fraud, to find the fraudster. It's a lot of energy you have to put in to find the people, to understand how they are working as an organization, and to get the right people in jail. So when you increase the number of frauds, they can't be anywhere.
And another thing I'm thinking, Laurent, is, so let's say best case scenario, you eventually find the guy or the girl, you manage to get them in jail. What about the money?
Money is gone very quickly. You have to understand that this is not one single person who keep the money on his account. It's a financial organization. When you've got different people dedicated to a very different task to perform the fraud itself, and the money is moving very fast, and it's split, it's used, it's reused, it's said, it's resent. It's very difficult to get the money back, especially when we speak about overseas payments. When it goes from US to China, going through any network, SWIFT network, European network, it's very difficult to track the money.
It was not really in scope, but is cryptocurrency somehow used in the financial crime world? Because you mentioned the different countries, the different currencies, different payment rails. But like, if you want to deceive even more, you just go through a channel that is not controlled by anybody, right?
Cryptocurrencies have a really bad reputation. For good reason or not. Which is to me a real barrier for the democratizations of these kind of technologies. The main issue we have is that you don't know who's behind a wallet. You don't know who's behind a cryptocurrency wallet. However, financial authorities in any country start to track if you own a wallet or not, if you get the money on this wallet or not, and how you more or less where the money is coming from, not how you use it, but at least how the money is coming from. So to me, cryptocurrencies are used to, how do you say this in English, blanchiment?
Money laundering.
Yes, money laundering. It's used for money laundering, but it's not a popular payments tool that businesses are using. You've got very few companies that do pay for services or products with cryptocurrencies. So cryptocurrencies are much more used when I'm a fraudster. I manage to get the money on the bank accounts anywhere in the world, and I will, you know, somehow move this money to a cryptocurrency account and break the traceability of the money.
Right.
This is how I'm going to use it. But you have to keep in mind that in the world, some countries are not very regarding where the money is coming from. Even if this is changing slowly, but sometimes they just don't ask where the money is coming from. So they don't care. They do not trust. In some cases, they do protect your identity, which is behind the bank account.
I guess we just pinpointed one, but what are the main challenges or pain points that treasurers face regarding those payment frauds? Because I guess it's a bit hard to all of a sudden know that somebody hacked my email address, which is completely external to your company, by the way. And it's just like, it's on me. It's me who had the breach in my defense systems. But then somebody goes through me. So that's one. The second one is you will never get the money back. What are the main challenges and pain points other than that, that treasurers face?
I think the first challenge that treasurers have is get their people trained for them to be aware of how it's working and being able to detect when there is a potential fraud in the payment they are ready to send to the banks. Okay? So this is, to me, the real first take is having their people trained to this kind of fraud. And why it's a challenge? Because fraudsters are very agile. They are moving very fast in respect to new regulations, new tool, new solution like ours. They know us, we know them. So they are very agile. They have no barrier. They are no constraint, neither legal constraint, no regulations. They move really fast. So from a treasurer, he needs to keep his team on the page, which is very complex to me, okay? Second one, we have to understand that the treasurer in the P2P chain is at the very end of the P2P chain, okay? So a lot of things can happen way before the payment go through his organization within the company. As an example, onboarding a new supplier with bank account information most of the time does not belong to the treasurer organizations. It's made way before, and you receive the informations. And even sometimes in the P2P chain of its own company, he's losing informations. If I caricature it a little bit, when a treasurer receives a payment order, he knows who he should pay. Guillaume's company, the name, not even the identifier of the company, of your VAT number or your tax number. And he say, you know your name, you know the amounts, and you know the currency, basically. This is all what he needs to push his payment to the banks. So he's got very few informations to verify that this payment is not a fraud or not. Okay? So fighting against push payment fraud, it's a corporate mission. It's not a treasurer mission. So he needs to alert its organization, the CFOs, to this kind of risk and how to protect the entire organization, which is not only his job. It's just like cybersecurity and viruses on your computer. You cannot finger point the IT if you get a virus on your computer. It's a question of training. It's a question of sanity, of how you manage your email, your attachment to the emails. So this is what the treasurer is facing too. And also, for the treasurer and for the company, imagine a treasurer, a decent sized company, where he has to pay the provider anywhere in the world. Nobody now is doing business, you know, 100 kilometers close to his headquarter. He's got provider, he's got relationship all across the world. Can be in China, can be in the US, can be in Europe, can be in Asia, can be in Middle East. So how will he have the intimacy to each suppliers to check and be in alert if something's changed? Okay? And that, even if he wants to verify, he will have the barrier languages and sometimes even nobody to contact to. Imagine you're just like, you're a Polish guy. You need to pay a company in Portugal. Do you speak Portuguese? Do the Portuguese speak Polish? No, of course not. So it makes a verification, the human verification, very complex for him. Because he do pay a lot of suppliers, a huge amount of time each month, each week, even each day. So how can he manage the verification of each single push payment he is get to do? So this is a real challenge he's facing too.
Love that. And we're going to for sure dive into how they can solve those challenges. Before that, Laurent, a few clarifications on my side. What is P2P chain?
The P2P chain is that the purchase to pay chain. Okay. It's when you decide that you need something, service or product, you're gonna have choose your supplier who's gonna fulfill my needs. Okay, this is gonna be this company, this other company. It's a company that I already work with or not. So you gotta onboard your supplier, verify it's a real company that is compliant. Okay, from with the low labor law, financial law, and anything. Okay, so you need to get information of your supplier. You need to keep it up to date, by the way, because this is not because you've worked with a supplier 3 years ago that is still compliant. So you need to do that almost on a daily basis. You need to get all the informations, where are the headquarters, who the contact name, what the bank informations are. Okay. So this is when you onboard your supplier. Then you emit an order for the supplier. I want you to deliver to me this or that. Then you receive an invoice, you need to check that he made the job. And then one day you need to decide which invoices you're gonna pay to which supplier. And then you need to, in your treasury management system, you need to decide where you're gonna get the money from, through which bank services you're gonna pay. It can be Swift, it can be Visa, it can be MasterCard, it can be directly in a SEPA system. And you send that to the banks. This is what in a nutshell, and to oversimplify what the P2P chain is, right? I forget about, you know, different currencies, a lot of complexity, but this is what the P2P chain is. When you choose a supplier until you actually pay the suppliers for a product or a service he has delivered.
Makes a lot of sense. And I think the main message here is also to highlight the fact that it's not just one department. It's not just treasury. It goes all the way from where is the needs initiated from? Like what department within the company needs that? So there will be the first contact with whatever counterparty they would get that from. Probably the procurement department then, because you need to properly, and then the legal department
regulatory, accounts payables. Yep, you've got a lot of departments in the P2P chain, and the treasury is at the very end of the chain and is responsible for paying the right supplier, the right amount on the right bank account number. So this is a challenge he's facing too.
Quite some pressure on our lovely treasurers, to say the least. Okay, you mentioned it earlier, Laurent, but so you know what the financial fraudsters do, they know what you do, what CSID and other of the likes. My next question is, with the ever-evolving technology landscape, shouldn't we be able by now to properly fight payment fraud and like efficiently? Like how come, thanks to all the technology we have right now, this has not been a problem that we solved already?
We should, but you have to think that most of the treasurer and treasury departments are using software suits, tools. You have to keep in mind that these software and these tools need also to evolve, which is not that quick.
Right.
When you think then with the fraudster, It's a cat and mouse game, and they always will way faster than you are to adapt. They are way much more agile than any companies. And if the technological landscape evolves for the businesses, keep also in mind that it evolves for the fraudster. So to imitate your voice, even your face, making you speak as me or me speak as you is something which is possible. You know that. And you know that using this technology, the first one to do it are the fraudster, not the businesses. So even if we've got new regulations, new tool, they always find a way. Ask me, as a company fighting against frauds, we get in touch with fraudster. They know us. We speak together.
What do you mean?
I mean that when a customer of us has a fraud attempt, when somebody's calling to say, hey, I'm your supplier, I would like to change my bank account information, our customers can say, hey, just call this number, this phone number. They are in charge of changing the bank account information. Phone numbers are ours. So we do receive phone calls from fraudster. Sometimes we just hang up, say, no, I don't want to speak with you. And sometimes we just cordially speak with them. They know that we do exist, and they consider both of our organizations are professional doing businesses. And they do consider that there is room for both of us to protect our customer against frauds, and them performing frauds against our customers. So it's a business, except that we do have rules we have to play with. Okay, we're an official company, so we have to comply with a lot of legal stuff. They don't care. They don't care about, you know, constraint that we may have, that our customer may have. But they are moving way more faster than we are. So it's for us, and it's a game. You need to understand the way they fraud, the way they do get organized, and you need to put in place the right barrier to prevent them to actually get their fraud successful. So yes, technology is evolving. So Treasurer will have much more tools to fight against this kind of fraud, and Fraudster will have much more technology also to set up frauds way more advanced every day.
So if I want to get the best use cases of new technologies and innovations, Laurent, I should just look at what financial crime is doing, basically.
I'm going to give you some example of a common scheme of push payment fraud, right? And then I will explain you how us as professional, we try to understand how they do proceed in a best fraudster world, right? So the way they can do that is can be as simple as a phone call pretending they are a supplier of a specific company and trying to change by phone the bank account information. You can tell me, hey, it's nuts. Who's going to do that? I can tell you. Some are doing it. The cost of trying is very low. You just pay people to get phone call. That's okay. Another way that you can manage to have an invoice from a specific supplier to a specific company. It's not that difficult, right? And you get the invoice, you just change the bank account information with any PDF editor you can find on the market, which is very simple. You change the bank account informations, you send the invoice to the customer. Hey, this is an update of my last invoice. So you can receive false invoices, okay? You can also have, as I explained before, you can have identity scam of the supplier. So you get the control of his mailbox, so you can send any mails in his name, okay, including changing bank account information. You can have a very common one, which is the Google scam. I'm a company, I am selling some products, I get an advertisement campaign on Google, right? I receive a phone call on Google to say, hey, you need to pay last campaign right now. If not, I'm going to stop it and you will have no advertisement on Google. And of course, Google is in Ireland. So they will send you a bank account information in Ireland. And because you don't want your advertisement campaign to stop, you just pay and you just pay and you just pay and you just pay. And just 1 year after, you receive a phone call from Google say, hey, you need to pay the last 12 advertisement campaign. And you're going to say, hey, I've already paid. Say, no, not me. You may have paid, but not Google. right? So if this is a common one, it can be more complex at using fake company, what called ghost company. So it's a real company with a real bank account information, but a company which has been set up to perform fraud or to act as a mule company. You pretend to be a holding or, well, we get a lot of stories like this, okay? You also have to keep in mind, I put you in the shoes of the treasurer, that the way of setting up the fraud is depending on the countries. You do not fraud in France as you do the fraud in China or as you do fraud in Spain. So, and I do not even speak about internal fraud. Okay, so an employee of a company who changed the bank account number of a supplier to put his own. This can happen too.
No way.
Okay, so you've got way different ways of doing a fraud. And I can tell you, the fraudsters are very inventive. So it's incredible how smart they can be. Okay, so what we've done within society is that we took a look of how you can set up a fraud, how some companies, customer like us, you know, big customers with a lot of, you know, money, very big companies, how they can get caught with a push payment fraud. So I give you some example. It is very easy for somebody to take his car, park close to a company, and having in the trunk a GSM antenna. So what's going to happen is that every employee of this company will have the mobile phone attached to this phone antenna that I do have in the trunk. And I will get a number of mobile phone for this company. I do know to who the phone is belonging to. We agree with that, right? Then, which every single GSM number I do have, I'm going to send a phishing campaign for SMS telling that, hey, your last order on Amazon, you need to log in on Amazon to just tell which day you want to be delivered, as an example. You're going to click on the link because most of the people have an Amazon account. Okay. You're going to click on the link and you're going to enter your credential on the defacing website. Then I will be able to attach a GSM phone number to a specific person. Then I'm going to do some social engineering in the company using LinkedIn, not to name them, tell whose employee has which job he's got in the company, and I'm going to target the right one. I'm going to identify their supplier, not a big deal. I'm going to scam the supplier, and I'm going to call the client with a complete context of the relationship between the supplier and the client, the specific person on a specific phone, mobile phone number. So this is all the technology in a nutshell they can use. And each of these steps is performed by specialists, okay? If you want to order me a specific website defacing, it's gonna cost you less than $100, okay? So this, if you want to get a phone number of a person in a specific area of a specific country, it's also very easy to do. This is how you receive, you know, sometimes text messages that say, how did they get my phone number? This is how they do that. They know that you're living in a specific area of a specific town or in a specific country, or you're working for a specific company. This is how they do that. So imagine with all the complexity of the technical world, all you can use to set up a fraud and all the options you've got to set up the puzzle to finally get to see the money.
This is absolutely insane. People can impersonate Google itself. If you see Google Ads campaign payment fraud being a typical use case, it means people can go as far as impersonating one of the biggest company out there. Lots to unpack here, Laurent. Internal fraud. Can you walk us through that a bit?
Well, internal fraud is that. So, I mean, to be fully honest with you, it happens. Okay, sometimes. I never understood how you can do that, or you should be like desperate. But for some people, it's working for a long time. But when you change manually a bank account of you know, a specific supplier for repayments. At the end, you're going to get coached.
100%.
That's for sure. You're going to get coached. But it exists. And even if you identify the persons, from the treasurer perspective, from the company perspective, is that you have been scammed. Your processes are not strong enough. Even if you coach a guy, if he did like 10 times, 20 times this, your processes are not strong enough. So we have to understand that the fraud impact is not only financial, that when you've got this kind of frauds, it shows, it demonstrates that your internal organization, your processes are not strong enough. So you're going to do a forensic for that. You're going to hire a consulting company. They're going to audit all your processes. You will have to speak with them. So it also will have a cost for you on top of the money you've lost. But internal fraud exists also.
I think we've discussed quite some real-world examples. Laurent, what are the measures that Treasurer can take to actually ensure security, at least mitigate that risk, and ensure confidentiality of payments, all this beautiful stuff that could actually help them combat and fight financial crime?
Well, to me, is automate, digitalize their processes and their control processes anywhere, anytime in the company. They need to automate. See, the current mistake that I do see that, hey, we only gonna check the payment of this subsidiary of from this kind of supplier, etc. This is to me a mistake. For a fraudster, if you leave the door open like this, he will put the foot in and get into. So systematic control, automate anywhere in time. I know it's not easy for a treasurer. You've got complex company with a complex ERP landscape, treasury management system landscape. So, but as far as I can, you should automate the control processes and put there anywhere, anytime.
What does that actually mean? Practically, like you talked about the P2P chain earlier. Do you mean that we need to, as soon as there is a new request to be done, we should put clear processes in place with the very intention of combating financial crime? Because at some point, like, I'm all for processes and automation, but I also can hear the treasurers and people from other departments as well saying, okay, but then we add so much friction that doing anything will take us so much time now. So how do you practically do that without getting too much in the way of actual business and of actually making money?
Well, it's funny that you speak about friction in the payment processes. This is what treasurers are afraid of, is to have too much friction by putting a new tool that will slow down payment processes. But when you take a look today on how they are doing that, I saw people working on a day-to-day basis. Before each payment, they just check an Excel spreadsheet. Well, all the lines, supplier, bank accounts, information, and they do check by hand all the lines to see if there were any change. So beside the fact that the human error is something that can happen, it's you break the life cycle of your P2P chain. You've put in place supplier portals, ERPs, treasury management system, communication tools with the banks. And you break this cycle by doing manual operations. So to me, this is friction in your process. When you automate every single process and you only raise the hand when you get a doubt, you should not pay the supplier on the bank account. It has been raised as a fraud attempt. Well, there is friction, yes. But this is right. This is the right friction. So this is to me, I mean, it's an investment. But it's something that every single company will have to do in the future.
So what do you mean by this payment has been raised as a potential fraud? Like, how do you actually detect those? Or at least put some processes in place that identify anomalies or like unusual behaviors from whatever counterparty? Because as you just highlighted earlier, it can come from anywhere. from any system, from any person, internal, external, via this system, via this channel, via whatsoever. So how do you tag or flag as many fraud attempts as possible? Because I guess you want to capture them all. Eventually you won't, I suspect, but at least as much as possible.
Well, if you're speaking about specific technologies or practices, I think that the first one you need to put in place is actually training and awareness. They are the first rampart against fraud. So this is something that you need, that companies should, that their employees should be aware that it exists. This should always check. In some countries, banks or governments are providing solutions to check the matching between bank account information and companies, right? So this is something that you may want to use when it's available. But keep in mind something, it's partial. It does not address, for example, factoring companies, some neobank that can act in your country that are not part of the initiatives, because most of the time neobank are like out of the scope of the usual banking system. If there is a bank account change, you should have a double high signature process when you do that. And of course, there are some things that companies don't want to underestimate, that I think that they don't, is you should have a good relationship with your cash manager of the bank you are using. So this is what you should put in place to start with.
Why? Well, what's the cash manager relationship has?
Because I'm sure that as an individual, some days you've received this message, Guillaume, did you buy a car in Las Vegas yesterday with your credit card?
I for sure did.
Or not. So this is what also banks are doing. They are checking unusual behavior of payments. Okay. They do that very efficiently for individuals. At least my bank is doing. It's very efficient. And they start doing from a corporate side. But you have to keep in mind that regarding the huge amount of payments of companies, it's difficult, right? But sometimes when you suddenly see that, damn it, I made a payment on the bank account information which are wrong, can be a mistake. Not potentially a fraud, but can be a mistake. In some countries, you can call your cash manager and say, hey, I did a mistake. That was just yesterday. It's less than 48 hours. Could you please help me to recall my push payment? Which is possible. And depending on which bank system you're using, but at least as an example in Europe, with the SEPA system, within 48 hours, you can do a recall procedure and get your money back. Unfortunately, most of the times for the push payment fraud, supplier fraud, you see that like weeks after, or you see that when your supplier call you 3 months after, I say, I want to be paid for that invoice. Could you please make the payments? And you say, hey, I made the payment 1 month ago, but I did not receive it. And this is when you discover that a fraud attempt was successful and it's way too late to get your money back.
Where people can actually inform themselves? Because you say, the first thing you mentioned, and I think very accurately, is you need to have your people trained. Because if you have a first line of defense for this kind of fraud attempts, being the people themselves, which is the highly, I guess, people are the ones that are the most likely to get a fraud through, not intentionally, but unintentionally eventually. So where do people can inform themselves about all this? Like, hey, this new technology is out. Literally, you can have an AI calling you with the voice of your cash manager, of your most used supplier, telling you to change the bank account details. How do you get all this information without overloading yourself with the information? Because I guess if you go down the rabbit hole, you can go as far as you want.
And this is where, to me, it becomes difficult. I'm an IT guy. I was working in IT since more than 20 years. Two things were very difficult to me in IT. Performances of applications and cybersecurity. And here, we're speaking about cybersecurity. And I do, and I was in society, we were convinced since years that collaboration was key, okay? And you can see that in the retails or C2C businesses, most, I mean, every single day you say, hey, is this restaurant? I liked it. It's very good and it's not that expensive. I buy a new car. It's a damn good new car. You should buy it. It's got all these options and you give your opinion. You share with people what you like and what you do not like. If you take a look at Waze, well, I don't know how to pronounce it, but for the English people, Waze, it helps you to drive home safely, telling you when there is traffic jam, when there is an accident, when there is police, and I should not say that for sure, but this is how people, this is what is, it's working. It's working like crazy, okay? You can modify the way people are driving home by collaborating between each other. And I think that to fight fraud, we should do exactly the same. If I get a fraud attempt, and if I get it, if I see it, okay, I'm sure that the fraudster is going to target other companies. They may be competitors or not, but at least if I could be able to share it, that would help others. Okay? And I think that this is something that should be developed. When you think that today, banks are not authorized to share blacklist of a candidate they don't want to pay. They are not authorized to do that for regulation purpose. But I do think that with cybersecurity, as you can see, I'm a big Daft Punk fan, so this is not this is a copyright, but I think that stronger together, when we want to fight, we are way more efficient if we work together than everybody on its own. Okay, the fraudster will always be stronger than you. He dedicates 100% of his resources and money to fraud your company. When your company, how much they do spend to fight against fraud? Certainly not even 1% of the global budget. So you have to think about that. So the only way to me to resist is actually to put the people together and foster the collaboration between people to fight against fraud. It's way more efficient. It's way more time.
I love that. And for the people not watching us on YouTube, go check us out on YouTube. This is why Laurent mentioned it, because we have the video and he has indeed an awesome Daft Punk headset, actually helmet behind him with quite the light background. Collaboration, Laurent. It's a very interesting one, because from my days at Société Générale and as a cash manager, but also as a consultant, the thing about fraud is that one might be a bit ashamed that they got attacked. And that's something they might not be very much willing to share, because that's a reputational risk. That's also something, hey, I've not been good enough at this. You kind of don't really want to share the bad stuff happening to you, especially when it comes to your job and your responsibilities. Is that not a additional layer of complexity to what you just explained here, meaning we can be better by collaborating, yet this particular problem is creating friction in collaboration?
It is. So to start with, you can speak about fraud attempt, not successful frauds. You start with that, right? And you share your experience. Now, when we speak together, when we speak with corporates, slowly they start to exchange, maybe not the amount, maybe not all the detail of the processes, but there is no one company that has been victim of a fraud attempt, at least. Okay, so they know each other, and they know that it exists, and they know that most of the times, one day they will or they have been caught by a fraudster. That's for sure. Okay. And they also do share the same, pain, the same risk, and they are ready to share and collaborate.
How is that? So I want to dive a little bit deeper into collaboration and data collaboration, helping to combat financial crime. To begin with, you mentioned something that the banks can actually not do right now, which is share the list of bank accounts that they have blacklisted. That, to me, is ununderstandable. Like, why wouldn't you share a list of people and bank accounts that any company shouldn't be transferring money to? Like, what's the reason behind that? What's the regulation has to do with, hey, let's not put safeguarders, and sorry, I'm taking a position here, but how is that? But then you modify it.
But you can have serious problem with the person or the company you've blacklisted when you should have not. This is the first issue. What if you're wrong? Keep something also in mind. The bank account that fraudsters are using sometimes open in very, very well-known banks across the world. And these bank accounts still exist. They are not closed, right? If the company that were fraudsed did not file a complaint, there is no reason for the bank, there's no legitimacy to close the account. So it's very difficult. It's a risk. And also take something else into considerations. When I do pay a supplier on a bank account, the bank asks me twice, you sure you want to pay on this account? You sure you want to pay on this account? Yes, I'm sure. So it's your responsibility as a payer to verify that you've got the right bank account number. It started to change, at least in Europe, with the EPC and the new regulation they want to put in place for the instant payment. Because we didn't speak about that, but instant payments, you've got like 7 seconds to get your money back. After 7 seconds, it's just it goes away. It's on the emitter side to check that he's got the right bank account, not on the bank. So it's complex. I don't want to target the bank. I think that they are doing a great job to protect their customers. But from a regulatory perspective, they also have to navigate in a very complex world. And it's not like, yeah, it's obvious. It's obvious for you from our chair, you know, the Daft Punk helmet. But from a regulation perspective, it's way, way, way more complex. There are big animals to move.
So what are the data that we can collaborate on? What are the points that collaboration is possible on? And what is happening lately in the market? And what can we do better as well? Because, okay, that's a clear issue. What if you're wrong? What if you're flagging a colleague bank of yours and like your, because it's also a reputation tarnishing. Like you might be putting in the wrong spotlight a bank of yours or even yourself. But so what are the things we can collaborate on, especially when it comes to data, Laurent?
What we suggested to our customer when we started to make CCID what it is today, say, hey, you know that you've paid a supplier. You know when you did pay, and you know how much time you pay, and you know where you've paid. So if you've made 200 payments on your own, and that there was successful payment, if another company made also 300 payments, there is no reason for that bank account not to belong to this supplier, in a way or another. So that's okay. When you start to pay a supplier on a bank account information, and all your community, your colleagues, know their supplier, but they have never been paid on this bank account, it should question ourselves. Okay? Secondly, A, you do receive phone call. You do receive later, post-mail on a pretending supplier want to change the bank account information. So you know it's a fake. You know it's a scam. And you know which bank account he wants you to pay on. Just raise the end. Just raise the end and tag this bank account. Okay? And then we all know that we should not pay on this bank account. Okay? This is something we can do. We can also tell that, I mean, the scam campaign most of the time are targeting one business, one sector at a specific period in the year. So we can raise warnings. Hey, take care. Right now, in this month of December, there are fraud attempts on the retailer for such supplier that do sell, you know, Christmas gift, very specific. So take care. So this is all the things that we can raise and gather to help company to secure their payments. Now you're asking me which kind of data we can share, and especially in Europe, and it exists in other countries. Patriot Act in the US, like GDPR in Europe, which data we can share or not. Okay, so yes, this is a topic that needs to be taken into considerations, but nothing that can't be resolved. From a company perspective, the bank account information is not considered as a personal data. Okay, then what you don't want to do is say, hey, I get this bank account, can you tell me who it's belonging to? This is forbidden, you should not do that, right? Or, hey, I need to pay this company. Can somebody give me the bank account information? This is also something you're not authorized to do. But what you can do with that, you can say, hey, I've got this company, this bank account number. Do you think it matched together? And you can have a yes or no, which is something very different. And also, and what we do is that we do anonymize and ciphered crypt data. So we've got a footprint of both identification of the company and IBAN and say, hey, we've got this number. Does it match together? So we anonymize data and we take care of that. So yes, you need to take into consideration data privacy and GDPR. And also, you don't want your competitors to know which suppliers you're working with when you onboard on a such system. So this is all something you want to protect from an intellectual or commercial properties. So yes, but you can do that by respecting GDPR and data confidentiality for your customer. We are doing that. This is possible.
We're going to lean gently into it, Laurent. But so you mentioned earlier that CISID take calls for their clients sometimes, meaning there is a fraud attempt by phone and they say, hey, just call this number. And then they get rerouted towards someone of your team. Do you share the information with banks or any other institution that those fraudsters that, by the way, are trying to work with you because they think there is a place for both of you, which is hilarious. But like, do you share information they potentially give you? Hey, can you like make this payment towards this bank account? That's an account you know is fraudulent as well. So how does it work there?
It's instant. We warn all of our customer on the second a bank account information is raised at a fraud attempt. So we do inquiry, we do check if it's real, because you don't want the member of the community to target, I don't know, a specific bank account information of their competitors just to prevent everybody to pay on it. So we do check that it's real, but at least each time it's raised at a fraud attempt, we say, if you control the bank account information on the platform, we got to tell you, hey, there is a fraud attempt ongoing on this bank account, please wait. And we do confirm that it's a real fraud or it's not. But we do warn the community in real time. And it can work across the community, but also on your own company. Because if I'm a fraudster, if I try to fraud a specific employee in the company, if it's not working with this employee, I'm going to try with his colleague. Okay. So as soon as one of both have raised a fraud attempt, that's going to work for all your company, including internally. So this is what we do. We warn all of our member that they were a fraud attempt on this specific bank account information.
I love that. And you're creating somehow this collaboration aspect that you mentioned earlier by enabling a community of CISID's clients that all get the information almost real time once a fraud attempt has been committed on any of the clients, whilst protecting the anonymously, to ensure that there is no competitive advantage for any counterparty in there. So I think we have highlighted quite some, but any other benefits or challenges that come with this approach of data collaboration to combat financial crime?
I would say it's agility. When working that way, we become as agile as the fraudster are. We can signal a fraudulent bank account as fast as they can open a bank account. So we fight with the same level of agility. One real stake that we had actually is to get people to share information with the community. Because this is working only if you participate. You can just take and not give. So when we started with this approach, that was a big challenge for us to convince people and company to share. But now, you know, after several years, it's just like a no-brainer. You want to join, you share. You play the game, or you're not in the game. Which is very simple. And it's to me, very efficient.
Makes a lot of sense. And I understand that the difficulty here is to create the traction and inertia, not sure of my English here, But once you get this, people want to be part of it because they see the benefits of it. But so how did you convince people in the first place to also give before taking or while staking? Because it's not, it's internal data. I understand why you might be reluctant to do it. So how do you, is there a quota? Like, hey, you will get that amount of information only if you give that much as well? Or how do you manage that?
Our customer do share with us their payment history. So we know who they pay, where, and when. And they do that on a regular basis. So it's mandatory. When you join the community, you've got to share your 18 months of payment history. And every 6 months, they need to share their payment history. So we always have fresh data from our community.
And they do that because they probably trust that you will anonymize properly all the data they send you before sharing it into the pool of data.
We went through a lot of, and we still are going through a lot of, IT and security processes just for the newcomers to check that we are managing seriously the data. So this is why also the company is ISO certified 27001 and 27701, which is the respect of the GDPR in Europe.
Talking about give and take, Laurent, I think you've given amazing insights to our audience throughout this whole 70 minutes now. So sing us praise of CSID a bit. Like, can you tell us a bit about what you guys do, what's your solution, and how you help combating payment fraud?
In a nutshell, I think that with the principle I've explained to you, you understood what we're doing. It's in 2016, we've gathered like 15 treasurers and CFOs around the table that were sharing the same issue. They were facing increasing number of push payment fraud, and they didn't know how to fight against that. They had to put more and more people, and they were not able to continue that way. So we collectively, we work on what could be an ideal solution for them to solve that problems and to automatize the verifications. So, and we've worked like 1 year together to finally put on the market a very simple tool. And this is what CSID is. You give us a company identification on the name, you give us bank account information, you just click on a button and you get a red flag, you should not pay. You get a green light, yes, go ahead and can pay. Or you get an orange flag, we tell you, hey, we need to do some more verifications before you can securely pay your supplier or anybody. So this is what we're doing. We're doing that real time. And this is how the collaboration was born within CSID. And this is what we still are. We are collaborating on a daily basis with our customers, with, raise the hand where you get a fraud attempt, but not only. We make the product evolve with new technologies, with new data sources, with new checks, and we still speak our customers. We're a collaboration-based company.
And I see why this business model could be exponentially beneficial for the customers, because the more people there are in there, the more data you have, the less fraud, not the less fraud attempts you will get, but the less successful fraud attempt you will get. Important phrasing here. How do you actually integrate with companies? Because I can't imagine that people need to manually enter. Well, they can, I suppose, but like they wouldn't manually enter all the, hey, this is the name of my supplier, this is their bank account or banking information.
Of course, no. You're right. We're doing much more than 2 million of verification per month on the platform. So you can't imagine that they do that manually by entering the company notifications and bank account information, of course. So when I did create this idea, I got something in mind. I'm an old guy, and I got a real passion for Daft Punk, but also for computer. And each time I was buying a computer, I had this little sticker on it, Intel Inside. And each time I was buying a computer, regardless of the mark of the computer, the brand of the computer, it was always Intel Inside sticker on my keyboard. And this is what I wanted this idea to be. Not a project, but a service that you can onboard in any of the tool you're using on a daily basis on your purchase to pay chain. So we've set an API platforms, okay? And we have been integrated in most of the ERP of the markets, most of the treasury management system on the market. So we are usable in the tool that our customer are using on a daily basis. And also, I didn't want to be a pain for them and being an additional tool that they had to use on their EV workload on a day-to-day basis. So we ease the use of CSID as a service within their day-to-day tool.
Of not adding any of those friction points that we mentioned earlier. And I love the storytelling, by the way. Can you share any success stories? And typically here, I guess it's whilst doing this anonymously, of course, but I guess it's pretty easy to say, hey, we prevented that much in fraud, because you actually see the amount eventually if you get an email or if you get an invoice, as you mentioned, or any of the other means we could do payment fraud. Like, can you share any success stories and how much money that can potentially save a company to work with CSID?
There is something I would like to share with you that goes behind the money they can save. When started this adventure, I made a lot of mistakes, like thinking that the fraudsters were drinking pina colada in Mexico. I also underestimated the impact it has on the treasury team when they were victim of a fraud attempt, and the pressure it is on their employees on the day-to-day basis to say, did I make thy payment right? Is that a fraud or not? And I met people that were suffering a fraud, a push payment fraud, and the employee wasn't able to get back to work because he felt responsible for the loss of money for his company. And it was impossible for him slash her to get back to work. So to me, a successful story is when I do speak with customers that say, hey, today, there is no way we can do our job without society, without your tools, because it gives us a peace of mind that you cannot transform into a, you know, euro or US dollar as a saving. But also to save money, we also help financial organizations to reduce the number of people that were dedicated to do these manual processes, so they can do something else that's checking bank account information on Excel spreadsheets and use their times for much more added value task than verify bank account informations. And they can reduce drastically the number of people that were dedicated to that before. And we've got one famous customer that win a prize of a digitalization of corporate finance while onboarding CSID. We were not only with us, but we were part of all the digitalization of the corporate finance that he've made to save money and make his organization much more efficient. You can easily find that crawling Google or ChatGPT if you want.
We'll most certainly do. Oh, it means it's previews. How up-to-date is ChatGPT now? April 2023, I think, or something 2023? Pretty recent. Laurent, that was an absolute masterpiece on payment fraud and payment fraud prevention. Thank you so much for that. Anything else you'd like to share on the different topics we touched upon that we didn't have a chance to mention, maybe?
Message to all people that think that they are safe with their internal procedure. You're not. If you take a look at cyber criminality, you've got big companies putting a lot of money on cybersecurity and protecting their information system against attack. And beside of that, every single week, you've got examples of companies that are completely stuck with all their system because of any ransomware. So it's just a matter of time and have a fraudster taking care of you to get a fraud on your organizations. So this is really what I do tell to people. Do not think of onboarding a tool like ours. Do not wait for having the fraud. Do that before.
And that's actually a good point before we close off this episode. Where do you start, actually? Let's say I'm a treasurer that just heard that, and I'm like, beyond the fear mongering, I need to take care of this, and I need to, that's a serious issue. Where do I start? Do I start by making an assessment of all the potential entry points for fraudsters? Do I call CSID and say, hell, help me out with that, just to understand how much I'm exposed, and then to implement? How does it work?
When we speak with a potential customer, we try to understand how they are working. What are their landscape? Do they have a unique treasury management system that, you know, gather all the payment for his company? Then this is where he should first implement a system like ours. If he's got a master data management with a unique place where all the customers are filled in with all the bank informations, he may think about integrating the tools like us where the master of data management system is. If he's got a complete ERP system, you know, 10, 10-10 system, he may not want to do it at that place. So it really depends on the customer, but you can tailor the integrations in respect to the constraints he have and the organization they do have. He may not want to use our API platforms or ERP or treasury management system integration to start with. He may want to give our SaaS solutions and web interface to their employees to start with, okay, to release the pain and to start to get confident with the solutions. So it's gonna depend on the customer context, but there is always a solution.
Makes a lot of sense. Laurent, thank you so much. If people would like to know more about you, SysID, or you know what, let's name it, the corporate that you helped that's won an award in digital corporate finance transformation, where should people go if they want to know more about all those?
Well, you should listen to your podcast.
Thank you. If they are here, it means they are. Where else?
If not, www.sis-id.com, and they will have all the information to get in touch with us. We're speaking like 14 languages.
Should be fine.
I guess that we should be fine.
English is included in it?
English included.
Perfect. We'll put all the links in the description. Laurent, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks to you to welcome me.
Pleasure.